Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
capacitors. This is probably the sixth episode, fifth episode on capacitors, and I'm going to basically get into the nub of electric field, because your understanding of electric field is your traditional route into understanding capacitors. But if you've got a limited understanding of electric field, that will mean that you'll have a limited understanding of how we can do funny tricks with electric field and actually get us the superconductor, the fable, supercapacitor. So traditionally, us old folks, you know, 50s or something like that, the capacitors we had access to at most would be a... you'd be lucky if you got a microfarad. So the capacitors nowadays the kids can have access are a million times more powerful. So there's something that's happened with capacitors to make them a million times more powerful. And quite frankly, they're, if you are stuck with the understanding of electric field as a sort of like a road rules for electrons, if you think, look, if I understand electric field, the electron must obey the electric field. Yeah, the electric field lines. If you go along that, it's unlikely that you're going to be able to understand it. Now, previously, I had to actually get you across the idea that the classical physics of point electrons and the charges appearing on the surface of conductors is basically a construct to help your teachers feel as though they understand things, and they feel as though they have taught you things, but essentially they have conditioned you to say that negative charges, like charges, repel and positive charges attract, and they would be absolutely gobsmacked to think that if I have an electron in space and I drop a proton in, that proton will fall into the center of the electron, and actually, strangely enough, in the center of the electron there is no electric field. How about that? If you can do an integral there, it's got no electric field, but the proton isn't. The electron has no surface, and it poses no resistance to a proton, and it actually sits in the center. And also, in the center of the proton is a little bit of electron. So inside an electron is a full proton and hydrogen, and there. And so this is relevant in that basic religious way that you're taught, this, that electric field lines start on a negative charge, start on a positive charge and finish on a negative charge. Now, so that's what we're taught. And then we're taught, then people are told to actually believe this. That on a surface of a conductor there's largely no charge in most of the area, but on very fine points there are little bits of negative charge, and if I draw a field line, I can actually draw it as a consensus field line. It can be from one electron, or it can be from 10 electrons, or a million, or 100 million electrons. That field line can represent things, and there's sort of a feeling that the field line is the direction that a positive charge will travel if allowed to be. So that's your definition of field lines. I hope I'm speaking to some people who've studied some physics. Okay, starting up again there, I just had to have a brief break as I met met a friend. And obviously, if you've got a big shotgun microphone, it's a bit more confronting to people. People are less, you know, they know what you're doing and stuff like that. The basis is that electric fields in space store energy, and so your capacitor is sort of basically an electrostatic battery. It's storing energy, a pseudo capacitance can be chemically, but true capacitance is just the electric field builds up. And when you say the electric field builds up, field means a volume, and a volume, it's the strength of the electric force over a volume increases. And obviously we've somehow scratching our heads, it's pretty much the same size. We've sort of reached the capacity, now we've gone to times we've increased it by a factor of a million, but the capacitor isn't any bigger. So what's going on here? And the true answer is that if you stick with what you've been taught at school, you're just like, I can think of two or three angles which you're not going to pick it up. And so in this episode, we're going to really, after all this long talk, we're really going to get into field lines and voltage equipotentials and that type of stuff, and and sort of get into it in a way and get a few starting points, and then we'll go in and perhaps in the end give you the catechism of that electric field lines go perpendicular from a conductor. Electric field lines never cross. I'm just trying to think of another thing, that they start at a positive charge and end at a minus charge. Yeah, I don't know. And of course, in terms of the full understanding of that, that's a bit more complex, and working things out. So if we start with a field, it's the important thing is to think of a two-dimensional or three-dimensional object where in that three-dimensional there are values in there. An electric field, at every point in that space, there is a field strength, or the electric strength. I don't know why they call it electric field strength, because it's actually not the field, it's the container. Yeah, it's the container for the information. So let's sort of start off with a few analogies. Say I am an evil pizza chef, and I have this truffle, this fabulous truffle, and I'm going to sell my pizza to people. I can't afford truffle for everywhere, so I put truffle on my pizza. So your pizza base is your field, your truffle is the value there. And I'm going to put it on one section of the pizza, and then at a peak, and then spread it out evenly so people can see there's truffle everywhere. I tell you in a lie, but there is a piece that I'm going to sell to my, you know, make sure that my guide, my evaluator, my, I've forgotten what the name is, horrible type of stuff, the person on Travelog or whatever it is, Google rating or Michelin guide, will have this and go, oh, this pizza's are fantastic. But rather than have uniform truffle on my pizza, truffle is this fungus which is designed to taste nice, so nice that animals dig it up and in the process spread all the truffle about the place. As you can imagine, that pizza is actually it's a physical pizza, and it has a variation in truffle, and I could describe the truffle field within that pizza. So and very much space is a pizza, Space is not nothing. It's got an electric field and a resistance to electric field and a resistance to magnetic field. So the two go together to allow light to travel through it and for energy to be stored in a capacitor. So this is sort of one of the fundamental aspects. If you have a capacitor, you are holding true, genuine space. It's something to behold. And then if you have fridge magnet, you are holding quantum mechanical spin of electrons. That's, you know, forget my demonstrations. A fridge magnet is enough for you to really go to town and think, well, what the heck's going on here? But so if you imagine that truffle is a field and there's more truffle in one piece, and it goes out uniformly. Now, I could actually, as an inspector, have a truffle meter and measure truffle located at one point and then thinning out, and I could write it down in a Excel spreadsheet, and then I could produce a picture, and I could have truffle contours, and I could actually have truffle lines. That is, the line at any point where the truffle was actually reducing as fast as possible. So it would be, if I had a little toothpick and I was oriented on my pizza, I could orient it at a particular point where the truffle density is going down as quickly as possible, and I could start from the top and just move off a little bit, and then my toothpicks would pull out, produce a truffle line. And so electrons do not follow field lines. Electrons, if an electron was infinitely heavy, it would, but electrons will just fly off field lines. So field lines are a mathematical construct. Now, what I want to do, so I've got that idea in the head. Another one I want to talk about is, so this is trying to break your belief in field lines. I hope you don't just get angry at people. Sorry if it's you really love field lines and it's, you know, something that you've made a career of telling people about. You can just poo-poo, you know, bloody hell, what would an Australian know? Yeah, now there's some stupid people on earth. They keep on following the Americans to every single war, no matter how stupid they think it is. So they're so stupid that they don't even address the fact that other people are stupid. That's how stupid Australians are. Okay, so what I want to do is get some sort of mathematical viewpoint. Now, say if, and people in the old days, before we had cleaning products and sufficient time, you'd have a ring in your bath. So you have your dirty kids and stuff like that, and it would leave a bath ring. And if mum bathed the kids would be not very dirty, but, you know, because they've been bathed a lot, the water wouldn't be very high, and it would leave a bath ring there. And then the dad would put a bit more water, and the kids would be very dirty because of it, and that would leave a very thick bath ring in your bath. The water, it's a different level. And then your granny would come along, and she's great with kids, and they never get dirty with her. So a very light ring. And so those are contour rings. Now, you could say in the bath, a kid in the bath would say, well, daddy fills it up to his ring, and there is a force that they'd say, the ring is making dad turn off the tap, right? So the ring is an artifact, a mathematical artifact of it. But if you're in the bath, you can think that the ring has an importance. I don't know. It's okay. So similarly, a magnetic field line is a line made by the certain circumstances, and it tells a story. But it's not the director of anything. and it's so that's the limit of that particular story. So we want to get, I've got contours and I've got, you know, truffle lines. I want to bring it all together in a little bit by I don't know if you've seen the Teletubbies or something like that, but or the Teletubbies is a British baby show where the Teletubbies live. I think there's four. There's Nunu the thing. There's Poe. Oh, I wish I could remember them all, the Teletubbies. I don't know what it is, but they've got a landscape. So if you can imagine a landscape of you know, Mount Vesuvius, a few conical volcanoes and valleys and stuff like that, and yet that's going to be your potential surface. So the higher up you're walking on that surface, and the higher up you are, the more potential energy you are. So that's equivalent to charges. And what I could do is I could say that the positive charges are the amount of charges. If I collect a large amount of positive charges together, that's on a high summit. If I have a few little charges, that's a little hill. And then if I've got negative charges, that's a deep valley. And if I have this ball, I will I'll let it go from the top of this mountain. It's just going to go in, or may go down the valley and out again. But if I've got a huge rock sled, what's going to happen is that as I pull it, I will actually only be able to go down the path of greatest gradient, and I will eventually go from the peak, and as I'm pushing this rock, I'll eventually go down to the bottom of the valley, and that path there is in fact a field line. So I'll just step out about, and it's got actually fairly limited value. It is an artistic rendering, so its origin is from religious art, and it tells you about the goodness of a, you know, comparative goodness of a person radiating out warmth and beauty and miracles and all that type of stuff. And so your field line, if you wanted to do it there, so imagine that I have this landscape, and what happens is that, you know, there's wildlife there, there's trees, there's houses, and you say, look, this is a science experiment, so there's the cops going around the place. It's a science experiment. So what we're going to do is kill all the wildlife, ancient orange, all the plants, burn all the villages, and smooth everything down. So you've got this surface that's walking around, and it's sort of, it was green, but you've burnt everything, and so it's all black. And so what you do is you've got cans of white paint. And what you're going to do is that you're going to, with that white paint, paint things at the same height, so you can see when you're reclaiming the land, things at the very same height. So you go up to your top, or you go to sea level, and the thing is a kilometre, 1,000 metres above. So at every 10 metres, you draw a contour. You can paint a contour, and you can actually, things go beneath sea level. Here it doesn't fill with water because it's a magic layer, and you can actually go over there and paint contours. Now those contours are equipotentials, and they're actually they're much more valuable than the field lines. Okay. And you can do, you can look at it, and you can walk around there, and you can see on that where to actually, you can see where the gradient is, you know, where the actual field lines come close together. You've actually got a big downward gradient, and the gradient down is the electric field force. Okay, and it basically, you have to, no matter how you trek from the lowest point to the highest point, you have to put in the same amount of energy. However, if you walk along the field line, the voltage contour, we call them equipotentials, you can do it without any expending any energy. So if you got your mate over there at field line, you know, you're at 600 metres and your friend's way over there at 600 metres, if at all possible, you can just keep on the 600 metre field line and you're not going up or down, it's all okay. Or if you're trying to look at where to put a ski line, you see where the field lines go really close together, and when they go really close together, it goes down. Okay, so essentially, in terms of energy storage, the aim of the game is the separation of charges, but also the introduction of charges. Now, what we're going to do here is that a certain potential difference in your construction. What we're going to do is we're going to simulate charges by big, heavy concrete blocks, and what we're going to say is the one at the peak of a kilometre up, we're going to initially set blocks at so the height of the things is the actual amount of charge there, and we're going to have signature blocks. So this is a bit hard to get across. So your height is the amount of positive charge, or your depth is negative charges, and where it actually forms a peak or a valley, it's actually a charge. We call it a charge there. So there's protons at the peaks, electrons at the valley, and for the purposes of purely purposes of surveying, I'm going to get a helicopter in, and it's going to go to every peak with its charges and put concrete blocks which you're going to drag. Now, at your highest peak, 1,000 meters up, I'm going to put 100 heavy concrete blocks, and then another knoll at 200 meters up, I'm going to put 20 blocks, concrete blocks, and what we're going to do is that we're going to put some red paint in these blocks, and we're going to get some slaves in, and we're going to say drag it down to the down the valley down to the bottom. So at the end of the bottom, it just so happens that there's as much positive charge and negative charge, we're going to get you to drag it down. And what happens is that you got your block behind you, and you start dragging. Now, you're not going to drag the block uphill at any way. You're going to go down the steepest gradient, and you will always follow the field lines, and you will always cross a contour line at right angles. If you don't cross it at right angles, you're visiting a mate. You're not doing the right thing. You're asked to always go downhill. And if you're always going downhill as best you can, you will always cross an equipotential at right angles. And that's there's a few of the secret recipes in there. That the number of field lines equals the amount of charge, and they will leave your thing at right angles, and they'll always go through equipotentials at right angles. And you're going to drag this block. And it's different from if some yobbos up the top roll balls down. The balls are going to go everywhere, knock everyone around. They'll be screaming at laughter as you are dragging your big heavy block. And you're going to take your heavy block all the way down. And you start off there with your 100 blocks up at 1,000 metres. You got 100 slaves there. They all start off equally spaced, and they will drag these blocks down the slope. And what will happen is that these sleighs will go at right angles, and because of the definition of going right angles to the contours, they will never the lines will never cross. And what will happen is that eventually, of that 100 up the top there, some will go and wind in and hit, say, a small valley at minus 200, and then some will all drag all the way through and hit at minus 1,000. And so what tells you is that as you look up, you can see, I can see the contour is at high, it's a high slope, because there's a couple of things. Your field strength is, there's two ways of thinking, is the closeness together of your electric field lines. As you go up will be your electric field strength, and the other thing will be the spacing between contours. Now, there's something I haven't told you here, is that there is an underlying law which tells you about the hill's curvature to the height. There's an inverse square law, so your hills are always pointy, like top. If you put your if you've got sort of molten toffee, and you or I suppose, and you put your spoon into it and lift it up, and it will draw to a point. So there is in this weird land, the hills are only of a particular shape, and they can only ever, the slopes from a charge can only ever be reducing in gradient as you go forward. Now, this is rather hard to say. Well, if it always increases in gradient, what actually happens? Well, obviously it increases in gradient until it reaches a quantum mechanical electron, and when it reaches a quantum mechanical electron, it will curve over and flatten off in the centre of the electron. There you go. Whereas your stupid teacher will tell you, oh, we don't know. Well, look, the bottom line is, we're quantum physicists. We do know. We've done the supercomputer calculations. The fact that you are alive based on it. You know, the evidence that this is true is the fact that we can now model you with it. You know, these simple things. So we've got up here. So hopefully you can imagine these sorts of things. And this is the landscape going in here. And if I have a metal, the metal in this thing is an equipotential. That is, if I put my voltage probe at any point of the metal, it's the same. And so, what do we do to make a supercapacitor? So that's what we sort of, if you can imagine, we've arranged this system such that we have we can construct, move this landscape around such that we've got a ridge, a linear ridge, and a linear valley, and it will actually create a very uniform slope between the two. That's your storage of charge. Now, the charge has to come from your battery, and supplied either from your battery. Now, there's a series of things that we can do. We can increase the surface area. However, in this theory, if we increase the surface area by increasing the crinkliness, we actually don't increase the number of field lines. So this is true. Just simply increasing the surface area of your plate, so I can get a tissue that I've blown my nose on, it can be relatively small. But I know the surface area is much bigger because I can pull it out, so I can have my surface area very crinkly. Now that will actually, in a conventional capacitor, not help you a bit because of the method of making field lines. It means that the same number of field lines are there. And so I'm going to have to finish this off pretty quickly. The critical thing is that I can actually increase the sort of strength of my electric field, the capacitance, by charge carrying capacity, by actually reducing the area. I have to give so much away here. I can reduce the distance between two plates. So what I can do is I can have this thing. I have to describe this in two parts. So a supercapacitor combines two properties. One, it has basically nanostructures. The surface is not like a mirror. It's got nanostructures on it. So therefore, if I was, you know, like if you asked me to paint a wall, say for instance, you got a can of paint, and they say, how many square meters do you want to paint? Oh, 10 square meters. But if you're painting a corrugated surface, you have to take on account of the length of the corrugation, as it was a bit now. And so you've got a massively corrugated surface. It's sort of like how much paint does it take to paint a kitchen, but if you take painting all the shelf surfaces going in like that. Now, all I can say is that as you create a cavity in a conductor, there is no electric field lines coming out of that cavity. So essentially the electric field lines are big picture things, and this is very fine stuff is not seen for it. So we have this problem of making a supercapacitor, yet we're not going to be able to make it just by making the surface crinkly. But indeed, supercapacitors are made with carbon films and nanotubes put on the surface. It's got a nanostructure. And so what we have to do is that I have to actually get charge inside that cavity. And the way that I do it is with this thing called electrolyte. So the fundamental idea is I've got two plates, and I put an insulator between the two plates. Right, if I put a conductor through the between the two plates, I've just got a resistor. So, but I do want to put something between the two plates where ions can flow, because if the ions can flow, the ions can actually flow into these cavities and actually face the walls here and create this huge surface area. So if I can get ions there, but I have this problem that if the ions, if I use something like a cup of salty water, which is electrolytes, you know, Gatorade is an electrolyte for you poor Americans out there, and we even know it. So, and you know, we've got this stupid thing. I don't know what's going on. They are beginning to pour drinks on poor coaches at the end of AFL Australian Footy. Apparently you started off in the United States. It was pouring Gatorade, of how to advertise a drink product. You pour the drink on the person, and people say, oh, they pour the drink on the person. It's sort of like I want to advertise a Ford pickup truck, so I just, you know, run into the stadium with it and destroy the field with it. It's crazy. Okay, but that is a electrolyte. Now, the electrolyte is there because it's got ions, and you need the ions to do your chemistry and stuff like that. It's really interesting that this nanostructure stuff is in nerves. The whole same game is really interesting. That's sort of replicated inside the human body. Okay, so we've got this problem that I want my inside of my capacitor to have an electrolyte, but electrolytes conduct electricity. So, and this takes a little while to look at it, to think it through, and look, the blessing is that I'm rebooting from, I was walking along quite happily, now I have to relearn everything. So, you got this thing, so you can imagine me saying, what's the name of that? That's a capacitor. Right. And bits coming back and you're saying, oh, she was, I guess I really don't understand that. So you start, look, the bottom line is that I'm not a wise guy. I've just had my brain reset. So I'm sort of getting into it again. So I've got these plates with these large surface areas and the field lines coming out of it. And bear in mind, if you learn the catechism of field lines and you learn electrostatics as a religion and sort of indoctrinate yourself, like you go to various masses, so to speak, you just repeat it over and over again, and because you've said it all your life, it must be true. You're going to have some difficulty here. So you've got this crinkly surface in your supercapacitors, and your electrolyte has got a it's got in there, and so when that surface gets charged, so if it's got, you suck the electrons away, the electrolytes can have negative ions which can flow into the area, and so your positive and charges can be right just an atom apart, so incredibly thin distance over an incredibly large area. However, we've got the problem that if this process is allowed to go on, you just conduct electricity. You put a battery in some salty water, or chuck your mobile phone in a pool, washing. You know what happens? The mobile phone doesn't like it. Now, incidentally, the number of people who say, oh, I've put my mobile phone in the washing machine, it's dead. And I said, oh, well, look, I probably can fix it for you. So it's just a fairly simple thing. You just get a polishing brush and polish it. What else are you going to do? Polish it. And you generally fix it. But moreover, is that people say, no, you can't do it. And you sort of think, it is more important for them to say that I can't do something than me to actually help them. And there they go. They spend $300, buy another mobile phone. Will they give me their old mobile phone? No, because it was pointless. It's much better to recycle it. You're going to go, ah. Okay, so this is the problem with charged electrolyte. They build up, and essentially, if I have two plates and an electrolyte, I make myself a dry cell or wet cell battery, and what happens, it will discharge, it will produce energy, discharge, and then I will throw it into landfill. So we don't want to do that with a capacitor. So what do we do? How on earth, if I have basically, if you can imagine the girls' dorm and the boys' dorm, and the dorms there, and the real hunks come in, a bus full of hunks pull up on the girl's side, and the boy's side, there's the beauty queens or whatever it is there. What are they called? What are those things Americans call? I'm just really trying to think. Mom. What are they called? I'm just really trying to think of it. What are they called? Cheerleaders come across. And these dorms will pull apart and leave nothing in the centre. And what happens, the thing is, so what you do is that you put an insulator in the middle of your electrolyte. So you have your electrolyte as a sandwich of electrolyte, insulator, electrolyte. And so this is the key thing to, I assume, electrolytic capacitors, but also superconductors, so in the supercapacitors, is that they have a nanosurface, then they have electrolyte, then they have an insulator, then they have the next stuff, and then they have it repeated on the other side. And electrolytes, because of this chemical nature, they have a polarity, they only work in one direction. So too with supercapacitors. But what I have done is that I have bought very close to things. I've got a huge surface area now, and the huge surface area will be useless in standard electrostatics. You would be able to say, look, I can approximate that. Forget there's the there'll be no additional charges building up on the inside of the cavity. However, you put the electrolyte and it sinks into the cavity, you can therefore charge it all up. You can get the huge surface area. So it's sort of like painting it. And then they have this barrier in the centre. And so what this means is that I have got this just mind-blowing difference in terms of the distance in there. And the distance is very small, the surface area is very large. However, what it's meant is that I've now cut my capacitor into two and put two capacitors. So a superconductor capacitor is a capacitor back to back. So there are so in a supercapacitor there are two capacitors, and essentially your capacitance is equal to the capacitance of your supercapacitor 1 and supercapacitor 2. And if you add up capacitances, so resistances, resistor 1 plus resistor 2, you just add them together. In capacitance, you have to add 1 on the capacitance. So it's 1 on, 1 over, all over, 1 on C1 plus 1 on C2. So it's C1 times C2 on C1 plus C2. So essentially, there's no point in making one capacitor a huge much better than the other one. Your two surfaces, you've got to make them relatively symmetric. Or if they're asymmetric, you just get the worst of your two capacitors. So what happens is that your supercapacitor, you throw away a factor of 2, but you allow this to happen. Now, there's one other thing, is this ions. These ions, not only can they go to the surface, they can actually mix. I find what the term is, intercation or whatever it is. The ion can go in and actually transfer the ion. It's like the very first stage of a battery. The ion can go in and transfer its electron in and change the valence state of ions already trapped in there. So you can build up a lattice with ions in it, and the ions can go in and transfer. So it's almost a chemical reaction, it's almost a battery. And I haven't really described that very well. But there you have it in terms of trying to understand a supercapacitor. Is that you've got these beautiful, beautiful things going on. You've got the very large nano area, and then you've got, besides the narrow area, you've got the electrolyte going in, stuff like that. Then you've got the barrier there, which gives you a factor of 2. But then you have this other thing a classic example of this is in your you say, oh, this is all fantastic, but you know, this is really what's going on in your nerve cells, this ion exchange. So the ions actually travel close, or it's not quite what's going on in the nerve cells, in that the actual ions move. I'll have to do something. I'll have to restudy nerve cells. So I understood that before my stroke, and I'll have to reboot there. So we've got this fantastic stuff going in. Now, the capacitors have huge surface area, huge storage, but due to the nature of your basic interatomic, you've got them an atomic spacing in your capacitor, so you now have these huge things. The amount of energy stored in capacitor is a half CV squared. So if you could store 1,000 volts in a capacitor, that's a factor of a million, but 1,000 times 1,000. However, supercapacitors are all limited to 2.5 volts, pretty much all, due to it. So it's sort of like there's this area which we've been able to move on with nano surfaces to get the huge surface areas, ions to get a huge area, technology to hold it back, but then again we've hit another limit. So supercapacitors do have this capacity to store energy, and I suppose the thing about them is perhaps the lower cost of materials and but they have to be, they've got much lower energy density, so they sort of have a role as taking the edge off of something. So if you've a supercapacitor is ideal, I'm saying this as I'm about to go home, is ideal in a braking system. So you can put a lot of power in and a lot of power out, but perhaps just to brake and to accelerate off. It's a little bit like your rubber band between, getting yourself fit for a marathon as opposed to charging up your pogo stick. I do across there. And then there's also supercapacitors for, use in sort of momentary energy storage. Now, I do think there's homes which are running on supercapacitors. Now, the other aspect of it is because there is actually no chemical, sort of long-term chemical reaction in there, you've got a much greater reliability of them. So they've got uses, and really, if you can imagine your ideal power system is possibly a supercapacitor to soak up intermittent power and then provide a longer term discharge for your batteries. So I sort of see it like a social situation where you've got the kids who can run around, have fun, then fall asleep, and the adults who are going around driving the kids there and ensuring everyone's got lunch and stuff like that. So you've got your capacity, so it allows you, where there is high energy density, intermittent high energy density, to take it. So it's with all these things, we've got abundant energy, but it's at very low density. So sunlight, great source of energy, but it's a very low low density. And again, with wave power, huge amount of energy, but very low density. Whereas coal is just a huge. Huge energy density from it. So this with capacitors, I might do possibly one or two more articles on, but this is more or less in line with my rehab walk. So I did one on technical problems, and this one's on capacitors. I'm about to hit home. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.